Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday evening, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts for tonight's show are Robert Brining and Jeremy Dunn. They'll be taking your calls and speaking on the topic of the week. You're encouraged to call in and share some of your life experiences with us. The number to call is 347-215-9442. That number again, 347-215-9442. Welcome to Pause IM Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the first Pause IM Radio show of 2012. I am your host, Robert Brining, and shortly my co-host will be joining me, Jeremy Dunn. I want to wish everybody, hope you all had a great holiday season, whether it was Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, whatever you celebrate. I hope it was a great one and a happy new year. I'm excited to be back. I felt like we've been forever. It's been about 3 weeks since we have had a show, so I kind of feel disconnected from everybody, not being able to connect with everybody this Sunday. So I want to thank you all for tuning in. If you're tuning in for the first time ever, thank you for joining us. What we do here at Pause IM Radio is we offer a safe space for people to share their stories and offer hope to people living with HIV and AIDS. And we do this every Sunday at 9 p.m. here on Blog Talk Radio. So it is an honor to do it. And we are about 3.5 years into this, and Jeremy and I are having a great time doing it. So I'm waiting for Jeremy to give me a call in here so we can start talking about what he's been up to. But while I'm waiting, oh, there he is. Jeremy, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I know. It's been like forever.
Right? 3 weeks. I feel lost.
I know.
I'm talking about that.
Oh, it's been way too long. We shouldn't stay away from each other that long.
Right. Well, the holidays landed on Sundays both times, so it was a bummer.
I know. But did you have a good holiday?
I had a great holiday, actually. The whole family thing, it was really nice.
Oh, nice.
How was
yours? Very good. It was lovely. It was nice and low key. My family was here and had a great time. And what else did we do? And then New Year's Eve, we just stayed home and watched TV.
Yeah, I think New Year's too. Joe cooked, and my mom came up, and we had pork and kraut and all that.
Nice.
You know, we kind of just laid low.
Yeah, isn't that nice? It's just nice to do that. Because, frankly, New Year's Eve is amateur night.
Uh-huh.
It really is. It's amateur hour out there, so it's always I'm always afraid to go out.
I hear you. No, we stay in every night. Every New Year's Eve. It's just easier and safer.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And we don't drink, so if we drank, it would be a different story.
Right. Right. Exactly. You know, you're right on. I have my non-alcoholic champagne and, you know, all that stuff, and we poured those and toasted, and off we went.
Were you banging your pots and pans?
No, I wasn't banging any pots and pans.
We did.
Did you really? You banged pots and pans?
Yeah, we do it out the front door. Yeah.
Oh, God. I'd have to hurt you.
Oh, no, our neighbors do it. It's really, really fun.
Oh, God.
Yeah, totally.
I can just imagine.
But besides that, anything else new going on with you?
No, just everything's pretty much status quo, and just working like crazy with the day job. So, and that's taking up, you know, a good majority of my days these days. But trying to get back into swing things.
A couple things I wanted to talk about before our guest calls in this evening.
Yeah.
One is over the Christmas holiday, the Monday after Christmas. I was on a radio program where I was able to come on and talk about Pause IM, the Pause IM radio show, and things about that. So if people go to my blog, they can find the information. It was the Monique show, and it was on Fishbowl Radio Network. And Monique Howe was actually on our show, I think within the first year of of Podzyme Radio, Jeremy.
I believe I was.
She has her own radio show, and it's called the Monique Live Show, and she had me on, and she was reaching out to me because she wants to also have you come on, too, and try to reach out to Jack. So, happened. And then another thing that I just saw that the Campaign to End AIDS put up was that there was a gentleman or a kid, basically, in India who basically hung himself with his bed sheets because he tested HIV positive.
Oh, God.
And it's a big issue over in these foreign countries to treat HIV, people with HIV differently.
Right.
I believe, like, previously we read articles where people were burnt out of their houses because they were HIV positive. And that was, like, in India and stuff. So, like, it's treated differently. So that was posted there. And it's kind of sad. That's sad that people are, thinking. Because, I don't know if it's normal, but I thought, I had thoughts about things like that when I was first diagnosed. But that kind of, went away, thank God. You know what I mean? So I'm assuming it's normal. I mean, it was for me. Was it something that you thought about when you were diagnosed?
Ending it all? Yeah, absolutely. I think it was like for a day or two. It's like, I could end all of this now, save anybody any kind of heartache and all of that. And then you realize, well, suicide is just stupid. So that's a nice selfish thing to do. But I think it is pretty normal and a common reaction. Certainly. And
yeah.
It's how do you get past that, and how do you move on, and how do you pick up and move on? So I think that makes it difficult.
Yeah.
But once you figure out that life does go on, that you're not gonna end, life doesn't end. It's much easier to keep going every day.
Yeah, once you get educated that the medicine has come so far and it's better for you and you're living, people are living longer with disease. It's kind of that cliche saying, it gets better, you know what I mean?
Exactly, it does. And time heals, for sure.
Right, exactly. Another thing that came out of the holiday season that I wanted to kind of bring up and talk about is this fabulous video of our friend Daddy Dab Garner from Dab the AIDS Bear Project, and it's called The Faces of HIV Dab Story, and I'm going to put the link in the chat room so people can see it. It's the featured video on the Podzyme Network if you're on there now. And it's a touching, touching video, and I advise you to go check it out. And it talks about it's Dab's story. It's how he created Dab the AIDS Bear and what it's all about and who it's his story. Just, you have to go check it out if you haven't seen it. Have you seen it, Jeremy?
I haven't yet. I need to go check it out.
Oh, my God. It is amazing. It just brings you to tears. So, I mean, Dab is amazing. We love Dab, and it's just a really great video for people to see how far we've come.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's, and also there's another video that's out with Dab and Donald Post. Remember Donald?
Yes, yes.
So there's another video that's out, and Donald shares his story, Dab shares his story, and then there's a plethora of other people in it. And I'll have to find the link again and send it and post it in. I'll find it as we start talking here and get it into the the chat room. But it's the trailer actually for it. So.
Oh, I'd love to see that because I haven't actually seen that yet.
Yeah, it was really great just to see everybody in there and say, hey, I know those guys. I know yous.
Right? They're our peeps.
There's our peeps.
What was the other thing? There was another video that kind of went, viral over the holidays was the one was, I believe, created and produced by the founder of POS Magazine, Sean Strube. And it was about HIV criminalization law and how they different state by state, and how I had people share their stories. And one of those people was actually the Monique Howe that we were speaking with earlier, who obviously, you know, they talk about their personal stories, how HIV played a role, how people who they were with, just how they were basically criminalized for being HIV positive. It's kind of hard to explain, and how it's really blown out of proportion in the media. That's one that I have to try to get up to. I think it's called HIV is Not a Crime. If you look that up on YouTube,
I think
that's an awesome, really, it's a video that really just shows you how screwed up our system is.
Yeah, it is screwed up, isn't it? Just,
yeah.
You know, other people can get, I'm losing my mind because I'm trying to look for this link and then trying to speak at the same time. it's we send tons and tons of dollars overseas to fight AIDS in Africa and other places, but we don't do it here, and it saddens me. It
very
really saddens
so.
Me. Yeah. So.
And I see that our is on the line, but before we bring on, I just want to say that I think Rick Santorum is an asshole. That's been on my this is debate and a lot of things that he's been saying. I just want to put it out there that I think he's a jerk. And
he
doesn't represent everybody in Pennsylvania.
And he's a scary, scary man.
Yeah.
You know, for someone to think the way he does in 2012, it's a frightening thing.
Oh, but I just had to put it out there before we brought on our lovely guest.
Absolutely.
So tonight our fabulous guest this evening is a Philadelphia pastor. Pastor Ingram has been living with HIV for 22 years, and she has been preaching about living with HIV and all these taboo subjects in her ministries, and I think it's a wonderful thing that she does. I actually met her for the first time a few months ago at an HIV Planning Council meeting, and I walked in the door, and I'd never been to these meetings before. And I walked in, I didn't know she was going to be there. Walked in the door and saw her face, and I instantly felt comfortable. I felt like I know somebody. And, you know, she's just one of those people that is welcoming and is loving, and I just think she's amazing with what she does. So please help me welcome Pastor Ingram to the show. Welcome to the show, Pastor.
Well, thank you very much. I don't hear any fanfare, though.
I was expecting
all of this hand clapping and hoorays and all of that. But thank you so much for your introduction.
Doesn't like sound effects.
No,
huh?
I do like sound effects.
So anyway.
We got to get the button that has the applause
yes.
on it.
Yeah.
I'll work on it.
So how y'all doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
We're doing well. How about you?
We're doing all right. I'm chilling.
Yeah? Just chilling.
Max is in relaxing. Don't get me started.
Oh, please do. Get started.
She's had a long day. She's probably in kooky mode right now.
Yeah, I have had a long day. I've just come from a Boar's Head festival. It was a really nice service, but it has been a long day. But most of my days are long. It's what I do.
It's how you roll.
That's how I roll. That's right.
Excellent. So, well, let's get started a little bit, Pastor, and let's talk about you. And,
well, you know, there's one thing that I'd like to clear. You said 22 years. Actually,
mm-hmm.
it's I don't know how long it's been. It's more than 23, because I'm in recovery, and so I'm in recovery for 23 years, and so. So I've had it before I was in recovery, but
okay.
I was diagnosed, my son is 19, so I was diagnosed about 20 years but living with it much longer than that.
Wow.
Yeah. Thanks be to God.
So tell us a little bit about of how it all started for you. How was HIV introduced to you? How was it brought to you?
Well, you know, I'm being an Aquarian, I'm a true Aquarian. You know, a lot of times, you know, I have my serious sides, but a lot of times I'm really happy-go-lucky. You know, and my husband used to say that I lived with rose-colored glasses. You know, I can't, you know, I don't deal with, you know, I'm just a la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. The world is lovely. Everything's beautiful. And so when I was in Phoenix House, when I was in treatment, there was a woman that was shot down from a role model program. And before she came into the house, you know, we were told that she was living with HIV. And so I remember her, I remember it like it was yesterday, you know, her coming in and, you know, she was shot down. She had done something bad. She was in bum clothes, you know, and all I remember is that, ew, you know, she has HIV, you know, and I remember, you know, when they, you know, washed, you had to have separate utensils. You know, she was sitting at the table with us, but she had, you know, they brought out her food separately in separate utensils. And it was just pure, you know, I just, you know, I looked down on her, you know. And so then, you know, so life went on. I got married. And my husband was an intravenous drug user. And he, at one point, received this huge, ugly blotch on his arm that wouldn't heal. And so when he went to get it checked, you know, I don't know how long he was holding on to what he knew, but he told me in March that he was HIV positive. And in September, he was dead. And so during his passing, you know, the hospital, because he developed PCP, and during that period, the doctors, you know, said to me, well, you know, well, maybe you need to get tested. And even going through his illness, it never dawned on me that I had it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they did a test. And I didn't have to wait. I think back then you had to wait like maybe 2 or 3 weeks or something. Well, whatever test they did, it measured the CD4 count. And when my CD4 count came like maybe 3 days later, it was, I think it was 350. So, you know, so I had been living with it for a while. So that is how I was introduced to it. And I always have to clarify, that I didn't get it from my husband because we hadn't even been married a year. I got it from being in the street, you know, being homeless and, you know, having sex all over the place. And so my husband's death was how I was diagnosed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, of course, you know, after being diagnosed, now I am living in fear because he told me in March and he died in September. And so I basically was just getting ready to die, you know, because I wasn't educated about it. But bless him. He was just in such denial and shame and guilt and just self-loathing that he didn't talk to anybody about it. His mother didn't find out until he was in the hospital dying. So basically, I was the one with the secret, you know. And so I kind of, once I made up my mind that I was going to, you know, fight and live, I just did everything he didn't do. You know, if somebody stopped me in the street and said, how you doing? I got HIV. I have the virus. That's how I'm doing, you know. So I just started talking about it with anyone I knew, you know, that wanted to listen. My family, I didn't come out to my family. My family actually came out to me. I remember the night of the funeral when we were standing outside, my sister said to me, are you okay? You know,
wow.
do you have it? And it was just, you know, so I said yes. So, yeah. So I didn't have to go through that whole coming out thing.
Right.
Because, you know, my husband died, and they just kind of put two and two together.
Right.
In their limited way, not thinking that I had it way before I met him.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So, but my family has been my hugest supporters. You know,
wonderful.
there was a moment of, you know, of course, you know, my mom. And, you know, back then, you know, people weren't really educated about it. It was a death sentence. So there was a time of, you know, crying. And, you know, if I got a cold, you know, everybody was, like, looking at me like, is this it? You know, is this it? But I just did everything he didn't do.
Right.
Whatever he didn't do, I did. And I just was determined that, it was not going to be my secret. I was not going to keep that secret because secrets can kill you. I often tell people that it wasn't the virus or AIDS that killed my husband. It was the silence and the shame and the stigma, you know, that he put upon himself. So I just don't do that.
So how do you combat the stigma issue?
I do what I when I came into the ministry. How do I combat it? I talk about it. I put, you know, my face is plastered all over the face, all over the place, as a religious leader, as a pastor, you
mm-hmm.
know, living with the virus. You know, I talk about it all the time.
Right.
And you know, I just think that having your face out there, putting a face to it. You know, takes away most of the stigma.
And what about, because you are a pastor, and I'm assuming that you
mm-hmm.
also have a congregation.
Yes. St. Michael's Lutheran Church on Germantown Avenue.
Plug, plug, plug.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so tell me how your parishioners have reacted.
You don't. My congregation is superb. I mean, we are just such a diverse group of community of people that it never was an issue.
Mm-hmm.
When I interviewed, I didn't say anything about it. I didn't disclose. But a month later, an article was coming out in a national church magazine that I outed myself as a religious leader, and
mm-hmm.
so you know I didn't know in the initial interview I didn't know whether number one when you're interviewing for stuff that's nobody's business anyway, you know.
Yep.
Personal stuff. So I just chose that route as the beginning. I didn't ask them what they were living with. You know, do you have heart problems or anything? So I figured, you know, it really wasn't anything that I needed to say immediately. But knowing that this article was coming out made me kind of a little anxious, you know. So the article dropped about a month later when, you know, and I had been here. And when it came out, there was nothing. I mean, there was nothing. There was no, you know, why you didn't tell us this, or
right.
how could you keep that to your, you know, there was nothing. It was just, they just accepted me with open arms. You
right.
know, and that's how we are. We're just accepting people. There was, you know, there's never been anything. They don't, if anything, when key dates come up, like World AIDS Day or the National Week of Prayer or some other, or a healing service or something that lends itself to me speaking about HIV, if anything, and I'm not saying that they do this, but they've heard it so much from me that their eyeballs probably roll up in the back of their head.
Here she goes again.
Yeah, here she goes again. You know, but not in a bad way.
Right.
You know? But it's not a surprise to them. And they, you know, it hasn't been an issue.
Yeah.
You know, when I introduced the HIV testing here that we have, they got tested.
Great.
I had Philadelphia Fight when I first started it. I think I did it like maybe twice a year. And the first time was in the beginning of worship. You know, they did the swab. You know, they tested myself. You know, surprise, surprise. They tested myself and they tested the intern that was with me at the time. And, you know, just so that they could see, you know, that it was not invasive and, you know, the process.
Right.
And so
right.
then we went on with the service, and when the results came back, you know, the lady raised her hand and said, I have the test results. And so, Pastor Ingram, sorry to inform you that you're HIV positive. And I'm like, no blankety blank, Sherlock, you know. But, And then, you know, the intern was negative, and so we went on with the regular service. And then after service, the congregation was invited to come into my office to be tested, and I was surprised. I was surprised that, you know, quite a few of them did. And so that let me know that they were open to that, you know. And so I've been testing bi-monthly for the past year. And you know the congregation is, if it's helping the community, you know, and this is your passion, you know, I haven't gotten any kickback or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a good thing.
Right.
I feel alone sometimes. I feel alone in that. Not as many religious leaders are. Doing this, that there are a handful, but not as many as I would like to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of gets discouraging. Sometimes I feel, when it comes to my colleagues, sometimes I feel like I'm talking, you know, to the wall or something.
Right.
Now, whether that is because, as you stated in the beginning about taboo subjects and stuff, I think a lot of religious leaders, and I'm not going to say all of them, but I think that a lot of religious leaders are more concerned with how somebody got, you know, making moral judgments, and instead of just doing what needs to be done, you know what I'm saying? Who cares? Really, who cares who you're sleeping with and what you're doing, as long as you're protecting yourself. And you know, I know even saying that as a religious leader, you know, you have people that have a lot of theological debates about, just passing judgment and just, I believe that God wants us to live healthy, wholesome lives. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I'm not saying, by no means am I condoning having sex willy-nilly. I'm not. You know, the best, we all know that the safest sex is no sex at all. But people are having sex. People are going to church on Sunday and coming home and getting busy, you know?
Yeah,
and they,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So why not just be sure that people are safe or people are educated about risky behaviors?
Mm-hmm.
So
let me ask you then, as a pastor,
mm-hmm.
as a member of the church, do you condone safer sex using condoms?
Yes. And in fact, I'm trying to, I am prayerfully, what is on my heart now to do, you know, but of course I'm going to have to touch base with my congregation, because I'm thinking about having condoms on my porch. A little box that says free condoms. You know what I'm, you know?
Yeah.
Anybody
that
wants to come up and get a condom, come get a condom. You know, but again, I have to be cognizant a lot of times of, because I can be out there. You know, I can be kind of, I don't want to say scandalous, but
yes,
I don't want
you.
To say scandalous. Shock value, you know, getting people's attention, but I have to be careful that I don't put the church in a
right.
compromising situation. You know what I'm saying? But I would
love to
have free condoms. You know, to be you know, the area that I'm in, you know, it wouldn't hurt.
Right, right. Well, you know, any time that somebody can get a hold of, you know, a condom, free or otherwise, it's helpful, and it helps, you know, because it really does help the community.
Mm-hmm.
At large.
Yeah, it helps the community. But then, you know, you have to think about the people who are going to talk about the pastor who is passing out free condoms. And what does that, you know, and what does that mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, for me and for you and for those in our community, it means that we're looking to protect the health of the community.
Right.
But for others are busy reading other, you know, stuff into it.
Right. You know, adding the judgment on top of
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, what I think what you're doing from a faith-based initiative is, you know, tearing down the bricks of
mm-hmm.
the whole taboo, if you will,
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
of sex and
right.
of
right.
HIV and all of this, and
right.
saying, you know what,
right.
you're human,
yeah.
you're going to do these things.
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
you're going to do them
safely.
Exactly. Do them safely.
Mm-hmm.
Do them within reason. Nobody's going to
mm-hmm.
pass judgment on you because there's nobody here qualified to judge you.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
I think that's what I'm hearing from you
mm-hmm.
as you're
mm-hmm.
describing this. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
so I
right.
so as Michael in the chat room says, I applaud you, Pastor Ingram. I applaud you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a my mind is always, okay, now if I do this, what's going to come? What's going to happen? You know, I think the latest article that was in the city paper, that took a lot out of me. Because you know, everybody was just, I couldn't walk down the street. I couldn't walk
down
without
someone knowing.
Yeah, without someone, you know, knowing me. And it was a good thing. And even through that, none of it was negative. It was just overwhelming energy. You know, we had a lot of people coming to the church, visiting, but there was an article that you put up on Facebook that I don't like. And it was the one that was done by Minister Robert. You put it up there about an hour ago.
Oh, it's already down.
It's down?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was blackaids.org. The person that did that interview, you know, you have, when you're doing these kind of things, you run the risk of being misquoted or people putting stuff in there that's not true. And I was never a prostitute. I never prostituted myself. I had plenty sex. I had plenty sex, but I never prostituted myself. And I never went in stores and stole anything. You know, I never did that to get high. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, you know, what that interview taught me was that people put you in boxes. You know what I'm saying? You know, for me to be, you know, smoking crack like I was and being homeless, you know, some people just automatically just say, oh, she was smoking crack, she was a drug addict, she was living in the streets. So naturally, she was prostituting herself.
She was
out there, you know, stealing in the stores, which was, you know, that didn't happen. And I have nothing against prostitutes. I mean, actually, I have nothing against sex workers, you know. I respect sex workers. When I went to the first AIDS conference, was that? It was in 2006 in Toronto. My eyes were open to, you know, because I always called them prostitutes, you know. And I always had, you know, in my mind, I always judged them for doing what they were doing. But my eyes were open to, you know, women who this was their living. This is how they provided for their families. And why shouldn't they be afforded health care and civil rights? Why wouldn't we have insurance for them? Because, again, they're servicing, you know, the men in the community. And so if you're not protecting the sex workers, you're putting families in danger. But that's another thing that I could probably get flack about for supporting sex workers. But, you know.
You know, they are out there risking life and limb. You know, and I'm not saying by just, you know, having sex. It's a lot of these sex workers are under the direction of pimps.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you never know whose car they're going to get into or what back alley they're going to end up on. And it's, they need the support. They need not to, that's a whole other topic that we should talk about sometime
is
sex workers and HIV. Because you want to talk about stigma.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm sure that there are some women who are doing it by choice, you know, that they really don't have to or they're just doing it. But there are women in other countries that have no other way of supporting feeding their families.
Right.
So... So anyway, that's why I did. Why I didn't like that interview with BlackAIDS.org. You know,
yeah,
and
no,
I found it kind of. It even, you know, kind of hurt me a little deeper because the person that did the interview was a sister, you know?
Right.
You know,
well, you know,
so,
did you contact them about it? I mean, I'm...
Well, I commented on the article itself.
So who knows if they really saw it well. Listen, real quick, we are down to the last 20 minutes of the show, so I just want to ask people, if you want to call in and speak to the pastor, have a question, you can reach us here at 347-215-9442. Press the number one button if you're sitting on hold, so we know you want to come on air and speak to us. I have a question coming out of...
Oh, I get to talk to people?
Yeah, if
yes.
You can call in, absolutely.
Oh, cool.
Again, 347-215-9442. A question I have in the chat room here on Pause IM chat room says, what advice can you give to one who believes being open about his or her status has to be and has been ostracized by family, but is trying to develop a voice socially by speaking more publicly, no matter what people may think about themselves in the Bible Belt?
Say what now? Say it again?
Yeah, right? What kind of advice can you give to somebody who's been ostracized for being out about his HIV status, and he's saying that he lives kind of in the Bible Belt area in the South, and his family has really been on him, and he wants to start being a voice, like an activist, and
yeah.
What advice could you
yeah.
give him?
Yeah, well, the you know, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is to surround himself with positive-minded people. You know, he needs a support system. He needs other people that so that he's not doing it by himself.
Right.
I think that's basically the first thing I would kind of say is, you know, it's one thing to be out and vocal and, you know, out there about it, but you can't do it. You can't do it by yourself because, you know, they'll eat, you know, you can get eaten up. So it's good to have, huh?
No, I said you're absolutely right. I agree.
Yeah. You know, you have to, you know, have some positive people, a support system in place or start getting one in place. Or move.
there you have it, James. The support system will be good, and I think being a part
or
of 5
a.m. she said, or move.
Or move. It is a great first spot for a move. We do have a caller on hold, so I want to go ahead and bring this caller on the air.
Okay.
Area code 773. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Eric. I'm calling from Chicago, Illinois.
What was your name?
My name is Eric.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, Eric. Hi. I just want to firstly say hello to Pastor Ingram, and I'm such a huge fan of the amazing work you're doing with the faith-based community, right? And it's like I'm hearing all this exciting news surrounding HIV and AIDS in 2012, like the themes of creating an AIDS-free generation, getting to zero. Those are all great and exciting messages, but what we're seeing here on the ground here in Chicago is that individuals are still afraid to embrace an HIV status, if I may say that, if they address those issues that are preventing them from seeking the treatment that's available to them. And what we're seeing is that stigma is a primary barrier to individuals receiving that care that's so very needed. And I just want to ask you, what do you think, what role do you think that the faith-based community could play in making these goals achievable in AIDS-free generation, right? I think the faith-based community could definitely set the pace in that. And how do you think you guys could work in helping to make that a reality?
Well, you know, I think talking about it from the pulpit, talking about HIV, or if you can't talk about HIV, have someone come in that's willing, that could do a little talk about it, having services, healing services around the issue. And really, I think that people in the faith-based people need to get tested themselves first before you ask anyone in your congregation or in your community to do it. You need to get tested yourself first. You have to lead by example.
Right.
And I also think that the buildings that churches have can be used for HIV work. You know, using your building to have HIV testing, or have an organization come in and do some HIV education and testing and all of that kind of stuff. You know, I think, you know, we just have to all get very proactive. And, you know, the getting to zero thing is nice. It's a beautiful concept. But we, you know, like you said, we do have to deal with the here and the now, and the people who are still feeling shame or fear. You know, so I just think that the more people that faith-based people use, you know, HIV-positive people, you know, to put a face to it within the congregation or within the community, you know, maybe that will do something.
You know what, Pastor, I totally agree with you. You know, and I think what you're doing by having people come and free people come and get tested at your church, I think that's something that a lot of, churches or faith-based organizations can do to kind of help get the word out. And it's kind of weird to me that talking about HIV is so taboo when it comes to, you know, faith-based organizations, but talking about getting a mammogram isn't.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be like that. It's just it's just advising people to go and get tested for something that, you know, could save their life.
You're right. Well, Eric, you keep doing what you're doing there. You know, start using. I mean, in every city, I'm sure that there's plenty of HIV organizations. You know, start calling them and using them. You know, like Philadelphia Fight comes out at no charge. You know, so use.
I love them there.
I love them too.
Yeah, they do great stuff there for people. So, you know, one of the other questions that was in the chat room earlier was they asked, "Are you invited places to speak, whether it be to students or to our youth?" Or, and then the question that I have is, do you ever go and speak to other maybe people of faith?
I have done a lot of speaking and preaching. You know, going and visiting other congregations. Yes. And I'm also the chaplain of the Lutheran Youth Organization. I'm around a lot of junior high and senior high youth in Southeast Penn, and I'm always talking to them about safety. But I'm starting. How do I say this? You know, I can't be at all places at all times, and I can't be the one that people are just going to continue to use me to come in. I don't want to say entertain or put my story out there over and over and over, and then when I leave, you know, it's what's that saying? As usual, it's business as usual, you know. If we're going to talk, you know, there has to be some follow up behind it. That's how I'm starting to think now. You know, it's exhausting to be asked to come talk here, come talk there, come talk here. So then, so now I came and talked. I've come and talked, and you've done your duty, you know, to hear me. You know, and then after that, nothing goes on. You know, it's just, I'm like, you know, get off the pot.
A couple weeks ago we had on a fabulous lady of faith like yourself, Bishop Joyce Turner Keller, and one of the questions that we talked about was, you know, when somebody's newly diagnosed, they always ask, you know, why God did this happen to me? You know, why did he allow this to happen to me? Was that question ever through your head?
Of course. In the beginning, I was pissed at God. You know, I was, yeah. When my friends, you know, was dying, I was pissed at, I was angry at God for a good minute. But, you know, mm-hmm. at some point, you know, you have to take accountability for your own actions. You know, when you break it all the way down, why did I get the virus? It's because I didn't use protection. You know, and I guess that's with anybody with a terminal illness or a debilitating disease, you know, that it's a valid question. Why me? You know.
One other thing that struck me as surprising was she said that she felt that why not her? Maybe God chose her,
mm-hmm.
just like maybe God
mm-hmm.
chose you, because
mm-hmm.
he knows that you could preach and deliver.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I've been there, and it's like, you know, being sexually abused by my dad as growing up, domestic violence, you know, everything that has happened in my life, there's a verse, a Bible story that I forgot what it was, but it talks about for such a time as this, that everything, our collective experience, you know, my collective experience in life has prepared me for doing what I'm doing now. So I understand the why not me. I've heard that a million times. It sounds cliche to me, and I don't like using cliche terms. But, yeah, that's exactly true. Everything that has happened to me up to now, I mean, I've had to do a lot of therapy, you know, internal work. And so why not me? Because if I didn't have that experience back then, I can't minister to you now.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
No, absolutely.
Absolutely. Mm. You know, it's you know, you hit the nail on the head. It's we try, you know, I work with an organization here in Charlotte, North Carolina, that we want to get a speaker. We're trying to get a speakers bureau built. And we were talking about, you know, I can't go and talk to inner city folks of color because I don't relate to them. I don't, you know, they're going to just look at me and go, yeah, okay, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You're not me. You don't live my life.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to find those people that do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying the same thing. It's if I didn't have these experiences, how can I minister to those who did? You know.
Mm-hmm. But also about you going into the inner city, you know, I believe that it's it takes a lot of relational work, building relationships. So I wouldn't count you out completely as not being able to do it. You just may have to find a community and develop relationships. You know, before, you know,
right.
maybe. 6 months, I mean, people, you know, they have to get to know you and start
exactly.
to trust you.
Exactly.
You know, so I wouldn't say that you can't do it permanently. You know, it's just, it would probably be a little harder for you to do it.
Right, and so I can certainly get the message out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
yeah.
How is the message going to fall if I don't have the same experiences to share?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True. Okay. All right.
And I think it goes, this, you know, it's, and I'm just using that as an example because it's I didn't have the same background that you had, but but where I can relate to you is, well, yeah, I had plenty of unprotected sex, and guess what happened?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here I am.
Right.
Very true.
Yep.
Well, it seems we are down to the last couple minutes, so I have the one question that we always kind of seem to ask at the end. If somebody is newly diagnosed and walks into maybe your church and asks you for advice, what's the one piece of advice you give them?
If somebody what?
Somebody walked into your church and asked you for advice and they just tested HIV positive, what kind of advice would you offer them?
Oh, okay. It would be, it's not over. It's not over till it's over. I mean, it's not over. It's just the beginning. It's not a death sentence. Be kind to yourself. That's a good one. Be kind to yourself. You know, don't beat yourself up. Surround yourself with positive people.
Very true. Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening, Pastor.
Well, thank you. The hour went by quickly.
Yes, it did, didn't it?
Yeah.
Hope we didn't keep you up too late.
No. I'm getting ready for, I'm going to watch Real Housewives of Atlanta in a little bit. see what Nene is up to.
Oh, no.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
You know, they're only just.
I love you guys.
Love you too.
Love
thank
you
so
too.
Much for joining us.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
Oh, what a great, great, great woman she is.
It takes a lot of strength and a lot of courage, and just it sounds like she's got all of that.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I think people who, because they find it so taboo to mix faith and HIV and sex and gay issues and all together. And for people who are involved in faith-based organizations or, you know, have a congregation, people like Harvey, who was on the show previous, and Pastor Eggman this evening, those type of people who are talking about it on the front lines and doing that, I think those people need to be applauded. I mean, it's just, it's awesome for them to be able to take the stand and be like, you know what, it's okay, you know what I mean, and we're still going to preach what we believe in. You know what I mean? And
right,
allow
absolutely.
People to believe that the opportunity to experience it.
Absolutely. I mean, there are, it's just, It's so rewarding when you can get out into the field and talk to people and really tear down the misconceptions and the myths that surround HIV and when somebody actually my favorite thing is when someone says, Jeremy, I have a question about HIV, and it's awesome. That's an awesome feeling when people are asking those questions.
Right, like, oh, I hope you don't mind.
Right, of course I don't mind.
Like,
ask away.
Yeah, well, but a lot of people think that, you know, that it's something they don't want to talk about because it's so taboo.
Right. Right,
wow.
Exactly.
So what else do you have going on for anything new on your website? I saw you did a new logo.
Yeah, I've got my new logo.
Ago, I know, but
yeah, I finally put it in there. I've got my my Cafe Press store. So if anybody wants some Positively Speaking gear, log in. You can buy a T-shirt, you know, or a tote bag, or a mug. I've got and there's pet stuff in there too. So if you want to get Fido. A little Positively Speaking T-shirt. There's one out there for Fido. Hats. All kinds of things. So, and by the way, any and all proceeds that I get from those sales actually go directly to community to into the HIV community here. So I turn around and donate all that money.
Cool.
So I'm not making any money off of it. I just take the commission and give it right over.
There you have it. So positivelyspeaking.com is where you want to go. Jeremy,
that's right.
The hour flew by.
I know.
Next week, Jack will be joining me, so you'll be off.
Okay.
But next week, Greg Halpin will be joining us, the Relationship Guru. So, again, more information you can find on Jeremy at positivelyspeaking.com. More information on myself, the show, past radio shows, you can go to posiam.com. Jeremy, have a great evening, and I hope you enjoy your week.
Oh, I plan on it. Have a good week, everybody.
All right, thanks everyone for tuning in.
And we're signing off.
I contracted a preventable disease from a guy that looked good and smelled good, but never mentioned that he had HIV. But he is not to blame. I should have loved myself enough to protect myself. But through it all, I found self-love, and it's the greatest thing I ever felt. I was never less than or equal to AIDS, but always greater. I just realized that not caring for myself or my body, I was my biggest hater. I am author of The Naked Truth, Marvelyn Brown, and I am greater than AIDS.